Hello and welcome to Cinepolitics, where we take a look at the social and political implications of today's most interesting documentaries and films. From Washington, D.C., I'm your host, Michael Ayala. I want to thank you very much for joining us. Today we take a look at Gazastrophe, The Day After, a documentary by Samir Abdallah released in March of 2010. Now, filmed in the days just after the Israeli attacks against Gaza in January of 2009, the film attempts to capture the nightmare through the images and voices of surviving Palestinians. But in what has become a crowded genre, this film takes a slightly different and welcomed approach. In Gazastrophe, the filmmakers choose to highlight the resiliency of the Palestinian people by pairing nightmarish images and harrowing stories with art, jokes, and poems. In essence, Gazastrophe introduces the world to Gaza as a metaphor, a place that both inspires and saddens those who inhabit its rubble.
عندما يصل الغد سوف نحب الحياة كما هي عادية ماكرة رمادية أو ملونة لا قيامة فيها ولا آخرة وإن كان لابد من فرح فليكن خفيفا على القلب والخاصرة فلا يلدغ المؤمن المتمرد من فرح مرتين.
اغتلوهم اغتيال، نادوا عليهم، طلعوا من الباب، اغتلوهم على الحيط، ابن اخوي لو شفت وجهه بتصدقش بني ادم. اسود من هذه، جسمه وجهه الدود بوكله. دفناه غصب. مش اجرام بشري هذا، تتري. شفت الحقب التتريين؟ المغول؟ التتار؟ هذا اصعب، مش تتار هدول، هدول مش بشر والله والله والله، لا لهم دين ولا لهم بنتي ابدا. صحايني
أنا سار الإعدام.
Joining me now to discuss Gazastrophe are Madia Benjamin, co-founder of Code Pink, and Adel Eskander. He's an adjunct professor of media at Georgetown University. I want to thank you very much for joining us. We truly appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Well, let me begin by just talking about what it seems Samir Abdallah is trying to say here, and I think part of what he brings to the table here, what makes this film different from other films we've seen about this topic, is that he brings in the cultural aspect. So let me begin with you, Adel. Tell me a little bit about that culture of humor, that culture of poetry and jokes that we see in the film.
Well, I think, first of all, one has to take a step back and look at Palestinian society. Culture is, of course, an intractable part of human experience. And so Palestinians are no different from any other community. When they express themselves, they use figures of speech, they use expressions, they use folklore, they use jokes. I mean, it is part of their natural experience of things. What is interesting about this particular film is that it shows how dispossession has two faces. There's one aspect of dispossession that is purely dehumanizing, and there's another part that brings out their humanity. And so we start seeing how people have both internalized grief, but also moved beyond it. And so while on one level they're mourning the loss of their family and the loss of their communities and the destruction of their habitat, their homeland, their communities, on the other hand, they find empowerment and emancipation in the communal experience, the fact that they're all in this together. They're all subjected to the same level of dehumanization. So it's a very, very interesting way of understanding the relationship between culture and catastrophe. And of course, poetry is a large part of the Palestinian experience. Mahmoud Darwish, who is featured quite prominently in this film, but you know, in every Palestinian experience, is very much connected to what it means to be Palestinian. So poetry has a way, not just in Palestinian society, but also in Arab culture, of being able to captivate the mind, to open up the imagination, and allow people to imagine their experiences in an environment that is deeply, you know, deeply empowering and deeply inspiring.
Quickly, Mahmoud Darwish is actually considered the Palestinian national poet, correct? Tell me a little bit about him.
Absolutely. Mahmoud Darwish is a Palestinian. He's a refugee in every sense of the word, and he took on that role, or has been celebrated in that role, sort of as the laureate, the poet laureate of the Palestinian
That's right.
people, for a generation at least. Of course, he's inspired many others. There's a long list of Palestinian poets who are both his compatriots and in some ways his descendants, who have followed in his tradition. One of which is Tamim al-Barghouti, for instance, who is now sort of a young poet who's used sort of new media and technology to be able to reach Palestinians in the diaspora and beyond. But they share one thing in common, the fact that they are able to express the grief of their community, both living in Gaza and the West Bank and in exile in the diaspora, and also to help them imagine what a better day might look like in the future. And so Mahmoud Darwish is part of a long tradition of Arab poetry, but very much entrenched in what it means to be Palestinian post 1948,
right,
after the initial catastrophe,
sure,
of the Nakba.
Now, Badia, you've actually been to the area, and in watching this film, you, like me, were struck by the humor that we saw. And I want you to talk a little bit about that in terms of your response to that, because I know when I see it, I know I can relate it to the African-American experience here in the United States. So tell me how you sort of view that through your lens.
Well, I think just as Adil said that culture is part of the human experience, I think humor is part of the human experience. And in some ways, when you are in a situation where there's so much raw emotion, it is shocking to see the humor come out, but it is also understandable when you recognize that people don't want to be seen or feel only as victims, only in the horror that they are experiencing. They are complete human beings, and as part of that, they want to find within them the ways to relate to each other, and humor is such a wonderful way to do it. I want to comment on the poetry part, though, because I think there is a bit of a difference there between sort of Western culture, where I think culture is, we're more passive at sort of watching culture. And it seemed to me in my limited experience in the Arab world, and particularly with Palestinians, they love poetry. And everybody is a poet, and people can recite poetry to you much more spontaneously than if somebody said to you, hey, you know, tell me your favorite poem or, you know,
right,
something
right.
you've written. And so that's why I really enjoyed this film, because I love the way the poetry is spread throughout, not only coming in from sort of the outside perspective, but you sort of feel the poetry when people talk, too, and the cultural expressions that are really very poetic. So I found that the culture sort of relieves you of the necessity to look at the people of Gaza as victims and see them as real, complete human beings, not just in their suffering.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because from the standpoint of the actual footage that we see of the disaster, it's not that different from what we've seen before. But as you talk about that aspect, from myself, who's seen many of these films, watching it and watching farmers, gentlemen who have lost their land, just, and I hate to call them common for the lack of a better word, but just regular citizens, they speak in such incredible terms, things that you would, like you said, never see in the West in terms of that sort of verbal acuity. So is that come from education? Is that from ethnic pride? Where does that come from?
I think it comes from a variety of different things. One of the aspects that we don't recognize about the Palestinians is that they have one of the highest literacy rates in the Arab world. So that's one component. And then the second thing is, in a continuation of what Medea said, you're also talking about a very oratory culture. You know, it's a culture where being able to express oneself with eloquence and articulation is a large part of establishing one's self-worth. So you've got the oratory tradition, you've got very high literacy rates, and then you've also you also have a society whereby the idea of getting the message out or being able to communicate one's strife and one's struggle is a large part of identifying with one's community.
Right.
So in a sense, you've got all of these things coming together. And of course, it's important not to identify Palestinians as sort of as solely oppressed. I mean, again, it's, you know, they
sure.
might be victims, but this victimization has not reduced them down to the lowest common denominator. They're capable of finding empowerment in expression. And in some instances, they have nothing but expression.
Gotcha.
And that is deeply empowering as well.
No question about it. I want to go to another clip now. In this particular clip, what's particularly chilling about this is that we see how children are experiencing these incidents like the bombing that we talk about here in December, in January, the Israeli bombing of Gaza. So let's take a look at this, and we'll talk a little bit about that when we come out.
عند الدار هاي الدبابات وهي هذه الجرافة اللي كانت تجرف بالجامعة وهي هدول دور وهي الشجر اللي كانوا مجرفينه
وشو هذا؟
هاي الطيارة اللي كانت ترمي الصواريخ
مين صواريخ؟ وانت وين كنت؟
من كنت قلب الدار هذا كنت خايفة كتير طلعونا من البيت يعني احنا رموا علينا الصواريخ قلنا هلقيت حيتمهم يرموا يا حي موتونا يعني كلنا شردنا من الدار يعني لما جينا هنا هاي الدار محدودة زي ما انتم شايفين والشهداء تحتين تحت البطون هيني أنا كنت عايت على أمي وأبويا وهي أختي برضو كانت تعيط
فيش حدا لهم هالجيت خلص أبوهم وأمهم وأختهم الكبار ماتوا لمين هالجيت يروحوا بيقوم في الليل يا بابا يا ماما تزعق أخوها توفيق تزعق أخوها وليد ما بتلاقيش حد تقعد تعيط لإيش هذا مش حرام هذا لا عليك مش حرام عليك هذي حملة صاروخ البنت هاي الصاروخ وأنا الصاروخ اللي عم تطلعيه من بطنك وأنا الصاروخ اللي حملاه هذا هذه وين الحملات الصاروخ يقولوا لهم امام ياخذوهم يامنوا عليهم ويرشوهم مره واحده هان امام تعالوا ياخذونا وتخف وين الامام يقتل زلمه قدامه اولاد 14 نفر قدام هذه اخويا وفي الاخر طخوا اخويا الكبير وطخوا ابنه هالقد طخوه هان بالخماسه هيك طخ يهاب القلب عدل يقتلوه على المطرح طفل ليش
You know, that scene was chilling for me because I see how children are experiencing what's going on around them at a time in their lives when there should be nothing but joy. These young people are experiencing some deep sorrow, things that I'm not even sure they understand what effect they'll have on them, but certainly those drawings don't portend well. Medea, let me ask you, where does it go from there? I mean, that young girl, I mean, there are only a couple of directions you can go. Forgiveness, or you can go in the totally opposite direction. When you see that kind of art, which is sort of interspersed throughout the film, which direction is this going to go?
I don't know that it goes in directions that diametrical. I think that people live after these kind of experiences with a constant turmoil of emotions, especially young people. I know that the art continues to be used in Gaza as elsewhere as therapy for young people, as a way for them to concentrate their emotions, to try to express themselves. There's a center in Gaza, the Ratan Center, that is a place where hundreds of children come on a regular basis, and they have a collection of these pictures that have been drawn and continue to be drawn by young people. In fact, they've traveled around the United States and other places. And you look at them and you think, this person must have to live in turmoil for the rest of their lives. I mean, how could you forget this? And yet I think there is a lot of emphasis with a lot of very skilled people in Gaza right now, of professionals who are therapists, psychologists, who are very trained people, both internally and coming from the outside, who are trying to work with these children to give them some positive outlet for these emotions and try to steer them in a direction that would be, I don't know if it's so much forgiveness, it's more how do you live a positive, productive life when you have been through such trauma.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, going back to something you said earlier about this situation not putting Palestinians at the lowest common denominator. I'd like to get your opinion as to how they've avoided that. I mean, it would be the easy way, certainly, and it would be what one might expect. How have they avoided it in terms of you see these young people and what they're experiencing, what they're drawing that's coming out? In one way, it is therapeutic, but also, how do they avoid falling into that void?
I think the one way to avoid falling into that trap of feeling completely helpless is perseverance. And really, Palestinian experience is all about perseverance. When you look at these young children producing this art, and I agree with Medea, of course, there are a lot of efforts in dealing with this. But again, you know, it's a huge uphill battle. Even when you're talking about post-traumatic stress disorder, in this case, it's not really post-trauma. The trauma is a fairly consistent, sure, experience that refuses to go away. And so I think to a great extent, it has to do with coming to terms with the loss and then looking forward to a better future in some way, shape, or form. But there's something very deeply integral about the Palestinian experience that makes resilience and perseverance a part of continuing to operate, whether it's in Gaza or the West Bank or elsewhere. I mean, you're talking about a community that's been dispossessed for at least 60 years, I mean, over 65 years. And in a sense, they've learned that there need to be strategies instilled. And these young people have developed a discourse in some ways, a discourse to understand what loss means and what loss represents. And they do it in their own terms. They do it with coloring books. They do it with pencils and pens and paper. But in a way, this expression 10, 15 years down the line will turn into a new form of articulation. And these might be the poets of the future. Right. They might be the new Mahmoud Darwishes. They might be the new politicians, the new representatives, the new diplomats for a Palestine, if there were to be an independent Palestine. And this is something that they would hope to do. So really, I think this is the first stage towards finding their own voice. And this is something that you can't take away from a Palestinian voice.
Sure. You know, I want to go to this last clip before we run out of time. And we talked earlier about the literate nature of the Palestinians. This is that farmer that I talked about earlier, who he is going to talk about a few different topics in such a passionate and articulate way that it really gave me chills when I saw it. So let's take a look.
Ya ard afrahi wa ya samaa hallili alaykunna min Allahi salam alaykunna min Allahi salam alaykunna min Allahi salam khudu dami saffuhu min sharayini khudu aqli ألحقوني بالمجانين وأعيش في الدنيا شريدا وأهيم في الدنيا شريدا ولا أبيع شبرا من فلسطين ولا أبيع شبرا من فلسطين.
أشكرك حبيبي.
أمسك سعيد. تحية إلى كل الأحرار في العالم. تحية إلى كل ما زال له ضمير حي، إلى كل من يحمل صفة الإنسانية. ليس هناك معركة ولا صدام حضارات، لا، العالم الآن يتجه إلى هذا الاتجاه، وهذا اتجاه خاطئ. يجب أن يصحو العالم، يجب أن يصحو العالم إلى هذا الخطر الآن. قبل أن يخرج لكم تراجعوا وخذوا مواقف شريفة، خذوا مواقف التي تتحدثون عنها ولا تؤمنون بها. أنتم الذين صنعتم حقوق الإنسان، وأنتم الذين شكلتم الأمم المتحدة، وأنتم الذين شكلتم مجلس الأمن، وأنتم الذين وضعتم كل القوانين الإنسانية بعد أن حطمتم الإنسان، بعد أن أخذتم الإنسان وجعلتوه من إفريقيا عبيدا لكم في أمريكا، والآن أصبح واحد منهم رئيس الولايات المتحدة. ماذا سيفعل أوباما؟ وأنا أعرف من جاء بأوباما إلى البيت الأبيض بعد أن قام المحافظون الجدد بتلطيخ صورة أمريكا على مدار 8 سنوات من حكم بوش المجرم. الآن يريدون تصحيح هذا الوجه القبيح بأوباما. لن تضحكوا علينا لا بأوباما ولا بألف أوباما.
We are here with Medea Benjamin from one of the co-founders of Copink, as well as Adil Eskander. He is a professor of media studies at Georgetown University. What I see there is a very proud man. I see a man who's angry at America, but also on another level, I see that maybe reaching out as well. So I'd love to get your impressions. I mean, that read like poetry. I mean, it sounded like spoken word. It was unbelievable. I'd love to get your impressions listening to that, because it was so powerful, so strong.
Well, I thought that he was a poet. I mean, he's so amazingly gripping. You just kind of want to
pulls you right in.
Listen, even if you can't understand what he's saying, pulls you in. And I think the whole film gives me a sense of people who want to work. They want to farm, they want to be fishermen, they want to have their businesses, they want to have their trades, and they're very capable people. They love the land. I mean, you see them looking at trees and almost crying over a tree as they would cry over a child. And I think that sort of love of the land, love of their profession, love of being able to take care of their families is what comes out so strongly in this man, and to feel that passion of why isn't the world doing something to allow us to live our lives, which is all we want to do, is so compelling.
I think to a great extent his last sort of treatise here that we showed indicates that there's a community that is brewing with anger and frustration. I mean, this is a community that has either been forgotten or dismissed or in some cases, had their discourse hijacked from them and described as all criminals. And this is, the response of a community mirrored through or at least expressed through the voice of a single man who appears to have lived through a significant portion of the dispossession of modern Palestinianness, as well as the intractable horror that has been exposed on Gaza. So in a sense, you see that anger and frustration, but there is an outlet. What he's offering is actually an olive branch in the midst of all this, and which is to say that a corrective, political approach is one that can change all of this. That the United Nations, the Security Council, the American presidency, all of those are institutions that are capable of changing the circumstances on the ground, but they have not. So really what he's done is throw the ball back into the court of the international community and the powers that be. And in a way, in addition to holding them responsible for some of the problems that, or the huge catastrophes that Gaza has been subjected to, he's also saying that we're actually prepared to, in some ways, forgive.
Yes.
And that is a huge step forward. So in the midst of the anger, there is an opportunity for reconciliation.
Yes, no question about it, and we all hope for that at some point, hoping almost against hope. Well, Medea Benjamin, I want to thank you very much for joining us. Adil Eskander, wonderful insights. Truly appreciate you being here as well.
Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. I want to thank you as well for joining us here on CinePolitics. We also want to get you included in on the conversation, so if you would like to make any questions or comments or even recommend any films, you can do that at CinePolitics@PressTV.com. I want to thank you very much for joining us. I'm Michael Ayala. We'll see you again next time.